Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 143 for February 12th, 2010, Macworld Expo. Not. Windows Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Do more and travel less with GoToMeeting. Make your next meeting a GoToMeeting instead. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/Windows Weekly. And by Carbonite, the leader in online backup. Backup your PC or Mac off-site securely and automatically. For a free trial offer plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com. Offer code TWIT. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers all things Microsoft. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, our interlocutor, our star of the moment. Still enjoying his 15 minutes of fame from beautiful Dedham, Massachusetts, Paul, your boy Thurrott.
Leo, remember last week when we had Mary Jo Foley on and yes. It was a really good conversation?
Yes.
This is going to be nothing like that.
We got a lot of very positive mail about that, saying, you know.
Yeah, that was nice.
You guys should get off
the show. If Microsoft would just fall down the gutter more often, you know, the show would be fantastic.
That's true. That was the occasion, wasn't it? Was that
sure.
That Dick Bass piece.
Well, I think there's, you know, I'm interested in the sort of perspectives type topics, you know, the industry history and how it, you know, figures into what's going on currently and so forth.
But you can only do it so much. I mean, you know, we don't want to be like chewing on this, you know, the bones every day.
Hey, if you ever want to do a Windows 3.1 weekly, let me know. You
know, 'cause that I've got an opinion about. So today is the show where we don't have Mary Jo Foley and we don't have really any great analysis. And so basically you're here, I'm here, and you know, you've got a cup of coffee.
If I don't pass out during the show, it's going to be amazing.
Were because you up
I
all woke night? Up.
Well, sort of. I, you know, not to turn this into a huge story, but I have sensitive skin.
Ladies,
story starts.
Look at your man. Now look at me. now look at your man.
It snowed yesterday.
Oh, I did. So, I heard that it snowed. It's kind of a maniac understatement.
Yeah. No, here actually, it wasn't that big of a deal. So, but it snowed, and when it snows at night, it's a good time to go in the hot tub. So, we went in the hot tub last night. But like I said, my skin is sensitive, and I made the mistake of shaving before I went in the hot tub. So now my neck is killing me, and I woke up in the middle of the night scratching like an animal, you know, and. I couldn't go back to sleep.
What happened? Are you allergic to snow?
I'm allergic to the shock that's in the hot tub or something. I don't know. Anyway, I usually nothing happens, but because I had just shaved, my neck was, you know, raw, and it was. Anyway, the point is, I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and couldn't go back to sleep. So, I was sitting down here at 4 o'clock in the morning, staring at my computer. My eyes were hurting and. I just said, all I could do was just be awake. So
wow, yeah, I had kind of that kind of night as well. The French call it a nuit blanche.
Okay,
that means
I call
white
it
night.
Sucktastic.
Sucktastic. You know, I read an article that says the reason you have a heart attack when shoveling snow is not merely the work, but that the cold constricts your blood vessels.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So be careful out there.
I can handle it.
Do you do your own shoveling?
Yeah.
I mean, on the snow.
I understand.
We know.
I'm a self-shoveler.
We know what you do here.
Yeah,
that's a lot of work. Do you have a blower?
We have a little one, but it's not useful if it snows a lot. And we just use it primarily for the driveway because the driveway is humongous. But what we really need, it's sort of like my, you know, the Hello Kitty version of a snow blower. It's useless if it's wet.
It purrs.
Deep, you know, the stuff you would want from a snowball. It doesn't do that.
No.
It's like getting a house to guard your, I mean, a cat to guard your house.
Yeah, not a good idea. Not a good choice.
It looks like it would do something, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good. You probably should get something more manly, something with more power. Well,
I've been planning on it, you know, and unfortunately my wife got the thing tuned up, so it, you know, it's working. It runs. It makes a lot of noise. Does that count?
I'm moving the snow.
Until you actually hit the snow, and then the noise shuts off because it stops.
Oh, man. I'm so glad we don't have snow out here. I just think. I like the snow, but I don't like having to deal with the snow. So, like, if you have to work or go anywhere, it's no fun. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Thurrott, I neglected to mention at the beginning of the show, is the man in charge of the Supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com. I think I'm channeling William F. Buckley right now. And he also is the editor for the news at the Windows IT Pro. And it covers Windows topics in his book, Windows 7 Secrets. Our topic today, Windows Activation Technologies Update for Windows 7. I'm reading right off the crib sheet here.
I was going to say, Andy, you got to love the way Microsoft names things, by the way.
That's so you cut and paste that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is it? Is this an update?
Yeah, it's an update to product activation in Windows 7. Product activation dates back to Windows XP, right? And I may have related this story, but one of the funniest things I ever saw was at the Windows X. Let me see if I remember which one it was. It was the Windows XP. It was Beta 3 or RC1 Reviewers Workshop they had in New York. And they brought the guy in from product activation. They had a guy representing each of the teams within Windows that were responsible for the big parts of Windows XP. And this is where they sort of announced product activation. And everyone hated this idea, everyone. And at the end of the reviewer's workshop, you could break up into groups and go talk to the people you wanted to talk to. And no one wanted to talk to anyone except this guy from product activation. And it reminded me of the scene from Airplane where they all line up with different, you know, articles. To beat up on somebody. That was what it was like. And this poor guy, I mean, by the time this thing was over, he wanted to commit suicide. It was unbelievable. So anyway, product activation has been a huge success for Microsoft, as you know, and it's been built into all subsequent versions of Windows. So in the Windows Vista timeframe, one of the things that they did was between Windows Vista, the RTM release, and Service Pack 1, they released a similar update to the one they're releasing now for Windows 7. And what it basically did in the Vista timeframe was address two things. One was just the new types of hacks that had occurred. These things evolve over time, so hackers had figured out different ways to hack into product activation in Windows Vista. You know, back in the XP days, it was actually very straightforward. There were product key generators and so forth, very simple. Windows Vista got a little bit more sophisticated. Now, the Vista update to product activation was a bigger deal because they changed the user experience at the time. Because you remember, when Vista first came out, if you were not genuine, or if you slipped out of activation, you know, if the time period expired and you never activated Windows, it would actually lapse into something called reduced functionality mode. And everyone hated this. And they got so many complaints, corporations, individuals, and governments, that they actually changed it. So in Service Pack 1, they made some changes to product activation to address new types of attacks, but also to change that user experience. Mm-hmm. And the way it works in Windows 7 is just like it works in Vista with Service Packs 1. So the screen goes black. You get occasional dialogues. But it never, you know, shuts down any functionality. The system always works as it did before. Now, what they're doing this week is they're releasing an update again to product activation, this time in Windows 7. It's not tied to a service pack. It's a separate update. And what they're doing is they're not changing the user experience, but they are addressing over 70 new attack types that have occurred over the past year.
Wow.
All right. You know, different types of ways of breaking into product activation. A lot of this stuff is around the notion of malware, too. Apparently, Microsoft has done these surveys of illegal copies of Windows 7 that are out there on the internet, and over 30% of them have malware attached to them, which is high in the past. Yeah, you know, so there's some anti
stunning.
You know, yeah. The thing that's interesting about this, though, is that unlike with Windows Vista, when they did this similar update, this update is actually optional. And in the beginning, you'll have to go to the Microsoft website to get it. And you might wonder, why would anyone want this thing? But, you know, some people buy PCs from these white box PC makers. Sometimes you might buy a copy of the software online, and maybe, you know, it seems like sort of a dubious source and you're not sure about it. You can actually run this against your copy Windows. And if it's fine, you'll know that. And if it's not, you'll find out. And then you can contact Microsoft and if you want to.
What about the false positive issue? And
Yeah. So obviously, this was an issue some time ago. And the way this was described to me is that these attacks have very specific fingerprints that they leave on the system. It goes after those only. They believe that the issues with false positives will be almost negligible or non-existent with this update. The other thing is that, you know, as the person from Microsoft is describing this to me the other day, what I start thinking of is I published this hack, you know, a workaround of sorts, sort of popularized this way to perform a clean install of Windows 7 using Upgrade Media. And so the more he's talking about it, he's talking about the different ways that, you know, this could trigger, and he's talking about changes to the registry. And so finally I said, hey, listen, I'm not sure if you, you know that about this, but I described the situation. I said, "Will one of the things I've always been very afraid of, and I talked to them a couple times about this last fall, was if I publish this information, is this going to come back and bite people later?"
Right.
Right. And the good news is that no, there's no issue here at all. The types of things they're looking for literally change, you know, the licensing files in the system to believe that the, you know, so to fool them into believing that the computer is in an activated state when it's not. I mean, they're very sophisticated attacks. So this is literally looking at binary files in the system, checking to make sure they match what Microsoft knows to be good online, and if not, replacing them and so forth. So the way they're going to deliver it is eventually it's going to hit Windows Update. So depending on how your computer is configured, you may actually get this automatically. So if you don't want that, what you can do is go into Windows Update, change it so that optional updates are manual installs, and then you can look for it. You can actually disable it. So you don't have to get it. They're never going to, in the future, require you to get this. So if you're not worried about it, or if you don't want it, you can just turn it off.
But so what's the advantage to me? I mean, these attacks are not against me, right? They're against Microsoft. Yeah.
If you bought a copy of Windows 7 at retail,
yeah,
and you installed it yourself, or you bought a new computer from Dell or some computer company that we all trust, you don't have to worry about this at all.
Okay.
So in that sense, I would just say don't worry about it. Let it install. Don't change your Windows Update settings, and don't worry about it. If, however, you bought it from, you know, Bob's Special Low Price Computer.com,
and they do that too, boy. I get calls all the time.
Yeah. If you bought it from a local guy, and you're concerned that maybe this guy used the same product key on 30 different computers, this is a way that you could offer up some proof to Microsoft that this guy's pirating Windows. You know, in those cases, if you do rat out someone who has sold you an illegal copy of Windows, Microsoft has a process you can go through to get a copy of Windows that is legitimate. So it's something you can do if you're worried about that kind of thing.
Right.
So I think the thing that's interesting this time around is just that, you know, that it's optional. I'm really surprised they're not requiring this. At some point, I expected to hear that, well, 90 days from now or 1 year from now, this will go out on Windows Update and there'll be no way to turn it off. But no, they have no plans to ever make this anything other than an optional update. So that's nice.
I guess.
Well, you know, if you have to get something you don't want, right?
It's nice to be able to not get it.
Well, I think of it, I guess, looking at my own computers, I'm not worried that any of these are.
Yeah, you know they're all.
I'm not going to do anything other than because I want to see what it looks like. I'll go look for it just to see it and see what it, you know, and run it and see what happens. But for most people, right, who got Windows legitimately, nothing's ever going to happen. There will be no pop-up. There will be no, you know, dialogue. Don't worry, you're safe. You know, nothing's going to happen. So it's sort of a non-event. If you're legitimate.
Well, I'm glad we spent 10 minutes covering it.
Well, no, I mean, I think it's, yeah, well, I, so.
No, it's not a non-event. It's not.
No, it's a non-event if you're legitimate. In other words, the reason I mention it is, in the past when Microsoft has updated product activation, they've always tried to sell it as if it were, you know, some consumer benefit. And I've always found that to be sort of a tenuous argument to make, you know, that, you know, if you're not, you know, pirating it anyway, you know, I don't understand. But, you know, I think there are people out there who, you know, there are these legitimate case scenarios. You know, someone says, you know, I downloaded the 32-bit version of Windows 7 from the student site when that offer came out, but I really want the 64-bit version. And I know that the 32-bit, you know, the key I got will install in either version. So maybe I could just go find this thing online.
Right.
And I'll use legitimate key. Well, you know, you may be getting malware with that system. So there are special
uses. That is a legitimate reason. Yeah,
absolutely.
That makes sense, yeah. Hey, we've got Paul Thirotta on the horn here. He is our Windows guru, the expert, and we're going to talk more about all things Windows in just a bit. Before we do, though, I want to mention our friends at Citrix and the folks who do GoToMeeting and give you a chance to try it free. GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. I know that's kind of a long typing job there. But that's what it is. GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. That's where you go. Look what you're going to get, though. You're going to get free 30 days unlimited use of this amazing meeting software. We use it all the time. In fact, a little later this afternoon, we'll probably use it with Ray Maxwell. He likes to show screens, show what's going on his computer during the show. It's a great way for him to do that. He's in Vancouver. We're here. It works for sales. If you've got a presentation you want to give, you don't want to fly across the country to make a sales pitch, hey, no problem. And, you know, the best of all, it's really easy for your clients. You're not going to make them jump through hoops to see your pitch, right? So all you say is you send them an email and you say, love, can't wait to talk to you. I've got a great presentation for you. I think you're going to be very interested. Here's the link. Add this to your calendar. We'll see you then. It all happens automatically. This, you know, they click the link. They're seeing your computer on their desktop. They're seeing your PowerPoint that you can collaborate together. You can train. We use it all the time. In fact, a lot of times people come to me and say, I want to do a meeting or, you know, a teleconference. Either they'll say some other software. I'll say, no, go to meeting because it's Mac, it's Windows, it works everywhere. Or they won't have anything. And I say, well, I'd like to see this. Can you get GoToMeeting? In fact, I'll give them the free trial code. GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. And then we're up and running and it's great. Please try it today. And we thank Citrix so much for their support of Windows Weekly. GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. Item two on our list today, this battery life issue with Windows 7. It's been coming and going. So now you're saying there is no issue?
Well, now Microsoft is saying there's no issue. You know, this came up briefly last week.
Right.
Every once in a while, something will happen. And I'm confused by things like this because, you know, I test a lot of systems. I've never seen anything like this. Obviously, people write. I feel like I'm the support front door for Microsoft sometimes. I get hundreds of emails every day. I've not really heard any battery issues, you know, this kind of thing. So when a story like this develops, I'm concerned, but I'm also a little confused because it doesn't seem likely to me that this is what's going on.
Right.
And, you know, you can go and look at the Microsoft support forums. Indeed, there were people complaining about this. There's some weird scenarios. You know, I know there was one guy who had actually bought a bunch of batteries, tested them, you know, ran into issues, and those are new batteries, so what's going on here and there? So Microsoft, of course, investigated this, and what they discovered was that there is no way that Windows 7 is causing this. You know, Windows 7 does nothing. It doesn't write back to the, you know, the EEPROM or whatever it is on a battery. It reads the information from the battery. And I think what is happening in many cases is that Windows 7 does include new technology that Windows Vista and XP didn't have that can more accurately gauge the state of a battery. And it provides a new notification if the battery is below a certain threshold where it will say, this battery's on the way out, you know, roughly speaking, and you may want to replace it. So people who had never seen anything like this in XP or Vista install Windows 7 and then they see this warning and they think, Mike, what happened here? You know, and they go back to Windows XP or Vista on the same PC and they don't have the warning and they think, well, it was Windows 7's fault, you know, but Windows 7 is really just notifying
smarter.
You.
It's smarter.
Yeah, it has more information. So, but one of the things they did, of course, because, you know, you want to do some sort of due diligence on this kind of thing is, you know, make sure, is there any way that there's some code in Windows somewhere that could somehow be causing this, or even if it's doing something like misidentifying what's going on with the battery and telling you that it's failing when it's not, or telling you that the battery has discharged when it hasn't, you know, that kind of thing. Is this possible? And they reviewed the code and it's not there. And, you know, they issued a very strong statement. You know, Microsoft President Steven Sanofsky said, you know, Windows 7 is correctly warning about batteries that are in fact failing. And Windows 7 is not incorrectly reporting on battery status, and it is in no way causing batteries to reach the state. You know, so they were pretty emphatic about it. And, you know, I kind of joke about the feedback stuff, you know, with Microsoft and Windows 7 and all that. But the truth is, as we've discussed here, you know, Windows 7 was installed on, you know, by 15 million people, legitimate or otherwise, during the beta period. They've sold 60 million copies of the OS already. And Microsoft also checked with all their PC maker partners. You know, is this something you're hearing? Are your customers complaining that all of a sudden they don't have the battery life they used to have? And the answer across the board was no, this is not happening. So my confusion was justified, I guess, because I just don't think this is a real issue for any number of people. I'm not saying that some people aren't experiencing issues, just that it's not Windows 7's fault. That's all I'm talking about. It's not Windows 7.
It's a bad battery. It's some hardware that's bad. Not Windows 7 doing it wrong. It's doing it right. It's smarter. Yep. That's all. It just knows more.
It knows better than you do.
It does. So. It does. You're not going to Barcelona, are you? For the Wii
No, mobile? I wish I was. You know, in fact, I would be, but I had previously scheduled a vacation for my family and another family for next week, so there's no way I can get out of that.
You should have scheduled in Barcelona.
But we'll have something to talk about next week.
Windows Mobile Conference is there.
Yeah.
And it's is this where Windows Mobile 7 will get its global debut?
It is.
That's exciting. You know anything about it? Anything you want to share with us?
Nothing you know of, no. We'll talk more next week.
Oh, you cold man. That's cold, maybe. That's cold. But but it is exciting. And you know, we've been writing it off.
Yep.
Even you and I have been writing it off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just as we've written off many other old and in the way technologies instead, really.
Commodore 64.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like the iPhone and Android had kind of were ruling the roost, maybe with BlackBerry in there, but.
Sure.
Maybe Windows 7's mobile is coming back.
You never know. You never know.
He's so cagey. I'm trying to draw him out, folks. I'm doing the best. You can't even see an itch. He's like, just, yeah, whatever.
I think that when you look at the smartphone market, obviously Apple and Google are kind of the up and comers, right? The platforms that I think of as the modern smartphone platforms that, you know, are the standard by which others are judged. You know, RIM is huge. I've always been confused by that, to be honest. But RIM is, in black, you know, with the BlackBerry, is humongous in the United States. In the same way that Nokia is humongous outside of the United States. And I'm also confused by that. But, you know, whatever. You know, there are interesting phones like those from Palm that I just feel like they're not going anywhere, you know. And then right in the middle of all this is Microsoft, right? And Windows Mobile, we've complained about it a lot in the past. We've talked a lot about it in the past. It's painful to use when you compare it to something like the iPhone. But, you know, one of the things that really intrigued me, we've talked a little bit about the market share stuff, and we've talked about stuff that wasn't market share, even though I described it as market share at the time. But it is interesting to me because it seems like the iPhone is really dominant in the consumer smartphone market in particular. But when you're out and about, you see iPhones, right? It seems like they're everywhere. But when you look at the actual sales in the last quarter, you know, Windows Mobile wasn't that far below the iPhone. It mm-hmm. really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It has been surpassed by Apple, no doubt about that. But, you know, if you look at the PC market, you know, Windows is somewhere between 90 and 95%. You know, Apple worldwide is literally under 4%. That's a huge difference. It's a huge difference. But when you look at the iPhone, compared to Windows Mobile in the United States, it's literally the difference between 25% of the market and 18% of the market. That's not a huge difference, right? Now, Apple is trending up, although not by much, you know, 1.2% quarter over quarter. Microsoft is trending down, but again, not too much, 1% quarter over quarter. But, you know, 25 versus 18, not a huge difference, right? So that's interesting to me. It suggests that if Microsoft were to do something right, they could reverse that, because clearly what's holding them there is the corporate market. There's no way that any consumer would ever walk into AT&T Wireless or Verizon Wireless or whatever it is, look at the 25 or 30 phones that are available, and then say, yes, this Windows Mobile phone is the one that I want. I refuse to believe that this almost ever happens. I mean, obviously it must happen sometimes, but it's inconceivable, right? For all of the awesome phones that are out there, right? Windows Mobile, really? I mean, that just doesn't happen. So how are they possibly 18%? It's got to be corporate sales. It has to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a good corporate platform.
Right. So if they could just turn it around with consumers, what a difference would that make, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Palm, for example, with the WebOS phones, the Pre and the, what's the little one called? The Pixie.
All
right. They represented 6.1% of the market in the previous quarter, which is a very small percentage. It was actually down from the previous quarter when they had about 8.3%. If Microsoft just picked up that number of sales in the consumer market, they'd be tied with Apple.
Well, guess what? This just in.
Yes, sir.
This is from the Boy Genius Report. Somebody put a link in our show notes on Friend Feed.
Yep.
According to three different sources,
okay,
Palm has just halted production of all future orders of the Palm Pre and the Palm Pre Plus.
That's interesting.
Three different sources. The decision is very sudden. One of the sources said Foxconn was told to reduce all February pre-forecast to zero on Wednesday, and nobody knows whether shipments will resume in March.
And this is the Plus versions as well as the...
Yeah, and the Pixie, and the Pixie Plus.
That's interesting.
So
it's almost like something's happening.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, that's a rumor. It's from the Boy Genius Report, and that's a pretty reliable on the cell phones.
Yep.
And they claim three different sources, which...
Not your typical blog.
If it's true, it's sad news. So it doesn't mean Palm's not manufacturing. It just means their pipeline's full. You know, they're not going to stop, but it means their pipeline's full, which means sales are
dismal. Yeah, and this is sad because they have a modern platform. It's beautiful looking. The devices are excellent looking. But, you know, you just get the feeling it's not going anywhere.
I hate to say it, but that's the feeling you get. Yeah.
Yeah. It's too bad. You want them to succeed. I mean, like many people, anyone who's been around for a while and owned PDAs over time and smartphones, everyone has had at least one Palm device. I've owned several of them, and I've always liked their stuff. Even when it was called Handspring,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is basically Palm 2, the quickening or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm saying though is, you know, when you look at the mobile market, and I'm talking about the United States here, I guess, you know, obviously RIM is pretty dominant, but the rest of it seems like it's up for grabs, you know? And I think that the Google stuff is going to affect Apple adversely. And so, you know, you kind of picture Apple falling little, you see Google going up a lot, but then there's that room for that, you know, for Microsoft, which still owns pretty close to 20%. It's interesting. You know, if they could pick up a very small part of the consumer market, and I expect them to do more than just a very small part, you know, suddenly they're looking very good. So all I'm saying is next week should be interesting, and let's not write them off yet.
Yeah. No, after looking at, what was it, the HD2, I thought, boy, this looks nice. This looks like a phone I'd like to have.
So, yeah. And that's a beautiful, beautiful
And I'm not, by the way, I'm thrilled. You know, I have not liked Windows Mobile almost since day one. I would love to see an improved, vital Windows Mobile platform because, as you, I mean, already people are buying it. And sure. Let's get some competition out
Windows
there.
Windows Mobile, I can't imagine it was ever great. You know, it just was never great. But, you know, it's interesting. I mean, before the iPhone came out, I don't think, back then it was fine, you know, compared to what else was out there. But it is amazing how the iPhone really changed things.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing, but I'd like to see some competition.
We all would.
Yep. Who wouldn't?
Well, so, Apple would.
Hey, we talked about this last week, and confirm for me, because I just, I have a netbook with Windows 7's build 7100, the RTM on it.
7100?
I think it's 7100.
Okay. I think it's not, but whatever. Anyway.
Is 7100 the release or 7000 the release? Anyway, it's not a, I think it's a beta, though.
It's 7600 is the.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So it's not the RTM. It's a beta. Yeah. So is that dying?
I'd have to go back. I don't even remember.
It's going to die on me, though, right? But I haven't. But we talked last week, and I thought I'd be seeing something by now, and I haven't.
No, that happens in March.
Oh, I have. Oh, good.
Yeah.
You know what I did?
I think the notifications begin.
I lent it out.
So you aired it out?
I lent it out.
Oh, lent it out.
To the school, my kid's school, because they needed a Windows platform.
Punishment? Did you get a bad grade or something?
No, Microsoft's doing a... a program for schools where you use, it's a competition for web design, but you have to use their Expressions engine.
Right.
Or whatever it's called, Microsoft Expressions.
Yeah, Expressions.
And that, of course, only runs on Windows. They're a Mac school. So I lent them a couple of Windows laptops, but one of them had that Windows 7 beta on it. And I'm just
So I'm thinking in about 4 days or so, they're going to get a message. And then the warnings will start, you know, March, whatever.
But they can still use it.
Sure.
It's RC1.
Yeah, and then eventually RC1, it will start shutting down every 2 hours. But, you know, maybe, you know, when you're working on a deadline, it tends to inspire you. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? Moving along to... Actually, before we move on to that, let me do one commercial here. And
okay.
If you do not mind, we want to talk a little bit about Carbonite. Backup is so important. Everybody knows how important backup is, but sometimes people forget that backing it up locally is not sufficient. You need to back it up to the cloud, to an off-site backup of some kind, because if there's a fire and, you know, a flood or burglars break in, you can lose the backup if it's just sitting right next to the computer. That's why I always use Carbonite. Set my parents and my family up with Carbonite. Encourage friends and others to use Carbonite because it's automatic. That's one. You know, people always forget to back up. It's got to be automatic. And two, it's off-site. So it doesn't replace, you know, backing up locally. You can still do that. But with Carbonite, you also have a copy in the cloud. And there's some great things. There's an iPhone app, so you can access your data anywhere, any file by file. But you can also sign on to any computer, get the file. So in a way, it's more than just backup. It's cloud storage for you that's done automatically. If you go to Carbonite.com right now, you could sign up. Use the offer code TWIT for 2 weeks free. And you don't even need a credit card. It's like this. You just give me your email address and boom, you're in. It'll start backing up so you can see how it does it. Doesn't back up the operating system or the apps. It backs up your data. It backs up your financial records, your music, your pictures automatically to the cloud. Now, you have to have high-speed internet. Or this wouldn't make sense. You know, always on connection. And the speed with which it backs up depends greatly on the speed of your upstream internet and how much data you have. But once it's all backed up, the incremental backups are quick and painless and happening all the time. And I just love it. So try it free. 30 days free. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIT. Look, you got to back up. Do it with a leader in offsite backup. Carbonite.com. So, we were talking about the expiry.
Yes, sir.
Of Windows 7, but there's also end of life expirations in the news today.
Right. So Microsoft this week released a humongous security patch. And as they've been doing recently in the days leading up to that patch, they released a post sort of generally explaining what was coming. But they are starting to talk about versions of Windows that are expiring and thus are not being supported anymore. And actually, there are a couple happening this year that are pretty important. So if you're using Windows XP with Service Pack 2, which I bet a lot of people are, that version of Windows is actually no longer supported as of July 13th of this year. So Microsoft recommends that users upgrade to Surface Pack 3, right, which is the latest version of XP, or, of course, Windows 7, so which is just sort of general advice. You know, Windows Vista, the RTM version of Windows Vista, the initial version, actually falls out of support starting April 13th of this year. But Microsoft has released two versions of two Service Packs since then. One of which expires next year, but Service Pack 2 is fully supported. And if you're running Windows Vista, if you're running any version of Windows, obviously you should be on the latest Service Pack. And the latest version of that for Vista is Service Pack 2. But the big one this year is Windows 2000, which is sort of the grandfather here. And Windows 2000 is falling out of extended support, which is the end of support, period. What that means is that unless you're a big corporation and can afford to pay Microsoft a monthly fee, Windows 2000 after July 13th, 2010, will never be updated again, security or otherwise.
Ooh, that's not good. Yikes.
So this is the time. Well, 5 years ago was the time, but right. You know, it's time. if you're Steve Gibson or whatever, and you're running Windows 2000,
I think he's moved on.
I suspect. Okay, good.
I think he's moved on. I don't know. Time. I think he's gone to XP.
It has been 10 years, you know.
I like Windows 2000. I'm sad.
No one's complaining about Windows 2000. We're just saying it's been 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, a lot has changed.
Microsoft can't be expected to maintain everything forever.
Right. So there are rare instances, again, if you're a huge global enterprise and you don't mind paying a hefty fee, Microsoft will take your money. But
So you could pay for ongoing support?
If you're, you couldn't. I mean, individuals can't, but
That's interesting because that means that they are developing patches.
Only for special cases, you know.
So I would have to say, there's, I want a patch.
You're literally paying for the development of a patch that affects you personally, or, you know, you as a corporation, But they're not going to, you know, as the monthly security patches are released every month, Windows 2000 will no longer be one of those OSs that's included in that list starting in July. I hesitate. I mean, I can't even imagine a normal person running Windows 2000.
It's kind of a little nudge to people who have like an old server collecting dust in the closet somewhere, things like that, to like, come on, guys. But
yeah, I mean, what are we talking here? Like Exchange 5 or whatever was back then? I can't even remember.
But that server probably hasn't been updated anyway for a long time. And all this means is it's just more of a security hazard, right? Because it's not that they turn it off, that it has to stop working. It continues to work. You're just not going to get updates.
Right. Exactly.
That's my big concern is that you have a lot of out-of-date systems with no fixes. Not that they were getting them anyway.
You know, it's an interesting thing. We talked last week about Microsoft and how they're slowly morphing into the next IBM, but... You know, it is an interesting part of the maturity of the company that its 10-year-old products are, in fact, still being used in some places, right? You know, that's the type of thing we used to equate with, you know, the Unix companies and, you know, mainframe and mini computers and so forth, that these sort of legacy systems would be in place a decade or more after the fact, you know. And maybe another indication that Microsoft has entered this new phase of its life, that this is even a concern. It's interesting. You know,
right? Yeah, it's nice to be, the old man.
I guess so.
I'm the old man of operating systems. Sure. So we started something a couple of weeks ago that Paul wants to continue our Windows 7 feature of the week. I still don't have a fanfare, but just imagine, if you will.
It's okay.
Imagine one.
Yeah, you know, when I think about the stuff that's new in Windows 7, I start at the top. You know, so. We looked at libraries and home group. And to me, those are the very big things.
Like the obvious stuff. The obvious things.
Well, yeah. And also, well, obvious in a way. I mean, I think to the average user, when you boot up Windows 7, you know, the first thing I think a lot of people would notice is this new taskbar, which is what we're going to talk about today. But, you know, libraries and home group are interesting because I think for a lot of people who aren't necessarily sophisticated in the sense that they don't understand how Windows works and so forth, they could use those features and never understand that something really new is going on under the hood and that these things are, in fact, brand new features. You know, if you're used to using My Documents and so forth, you move to Windows 7 and you use the Documents library. I mean, you never have to know that it's doing something completely different under the hood, and yet it is. And so those features are really interesting to me. And, you know, but the taskbar is one of those, maybe the poster child for Windows 7. In my mind, it takes a backseat to some of the stuff we've already talked about. But the taskbar, I think, is that first one that anyone would notice that there's a difference going on here. So we've talked about the taskbar a lot already on the podcast. I don't want to beat it to death. But a couple of things that I would just mention is, I have written a feature focus article about the taskbar that's been on my site for a long, long time. But if you go to my Windows 7 page, you'll see it there. And obviously, we'll provide a link to that in the show notes. But some of the stuff that you discuss when you talk about the taskbar is, again, the notion that Microsoft by default is providing something that is very similar to what's been available on Mac OS X for a long time. You know, a single place for shortcuts and also for buttons that represent running applications. So they're commingling those things into a single UI for the first time in Windows. You're seeing the deprecation of the Start menu as a place to launch applications, because now that the shortcuts are available right in the taskbar and you can pin things there, I think less and less people will be going to the Start menu to launch applications. So I think that's going to have ramifications for the future. It's brand new, so it's slightly unsophisticated in some cases. So for example, one of the things we've talked about in the past is that without doing some workarounds, you can only have a single button for any application type. So if you wanted to have a bunch of shortcuts to different Explorer locations, you know, by default, you can't. You can only have to use the jump lists, right? Which we'll talk about separately in the future. these mini start menus, you know, that are attached to each taskbar button. And the other thing I would just point out is that, and this is especially an issue, I think, for people who have large displays and high-resolution displays and so forth, is that Microsoft in this version has decided not to offer button captions on each of the, you know, the buttons that represent running applications by default. So you just get that icon without any explanation of what that is. And as you open more and more windows for each application, if you open a bunch of Word documents, if you open a bunch of browser windows and so forth, I feel that the default configuration could be a little confusing for people. But there is a way to configure it differently so that these things do have button captions by default, which is the way that I prefer to use the system. And I think it's a better way for most people, and by most people, I mean normal people, you know, average users and so forth, I think would benefit from that. So this information is all available in the document that I wrote some time ago, but there, like I said, I've got a feature-focused article about the taskbar, and rather than just sort of read through it here, I would just, if you're interested in learning more about the taskbar, I've got a lot more information on the site. So I would just go to the Windows 7 page on my website and look for the feature focus articles, and you can find the taskbar article in there.
Great. It is a, it's a nice feature, but I think you're right. There's some customization that can be easily done to make it.
A lot of stuff going on there. You know, and it is, you know, again, they've re-engineered it completely. It's first time, I would say the most major change to the taskbar since there's been a taskbar.
I really like it. I know that you don't like the combine all icons and all that stuff.
I you get used to it. Yeah, so I guess I really the like way it. I would say it is, it's a little unusual. I think if you've been following Windows, using Windows for years and years, suddenly it's different. You know, and I think the way for most people to think of it is, if you're familiar with the way the Quick Launch toolbar worked in Windows XP and Windows Vista, it's like they combined that with the old taskbar. So it does both things, but it just does it in one place. Certainly there are benefits to it. You can organize the buttons in any order you want, which sounds like sort of a silly thing, but, you know, as we had discussed in the past, you know, Microsoft found in testing that people would actually launch applications in particular orders so that those buttons in the bottom of the taskbar would be ordered the way they wanted them. You know, and if they got out of order for some reason, if something launched at the wrong time, they would actually close things down so they could get it right. So now you can drag them around and you can just order them however you want. You know, like a real OS.
You know, it's interesting because Apple modified its dock to be much more like that Windows Combine All.
Sure.
In Snow Leopard. So there's so much there's just a lot of cross-pollinization. It goes back and forth, really. This portion of the show coming up in just a bit, by the way, we've got our Windows 7 tip of the week, our regular tip of the week, and a software pick of the week. In fact, one I'm really excited about.
Actually, I have a second software pick that I forgot to send you.
Poor guy just cannot stop. I know. Before we do, though, I do want to mention our friends who do those audio books that we, Paul and I, listen to so much. Audible.com. If you go to audible.com/windows, you could try it right now for free. Get a book free. You'll sign up for the gold account, which is one book a month. And the first one's free, and you get to keep it forever. Audible is online, which means you can get it's instant satisfaction. 70,000 titles, so it's really a huge bookstore. Pretty much everything ever recorded for audio is in there. And, you know, bestsellers, classics, history, fiction, thrillers, science fiction. This is a good pick for Paul. I think it's timely. Paul Thurrott, as an Audible, devoted Audible listener, has a pick of the week this week.
Yeah, this is it's kind of a tricky one. So Howard Zinn, a famous historian, died recently, didn't he?
Yes. A couple weeks ago. Yep.
So he's written a famous book called A People's History of the United States, and the initial version of it was called 1492 to Present. Now the problem is that book is available in unabridged form on Audible, but it's a two-credit title, so it wouldn't be one that you could use as your initial book, right?
Yeah, you'd have to pay for that second credit.
Yeah, so what they do have is a subset of that called The People's History of the United States Highlights from the 20th Century.
It's 8 hours. I think it's enough.
So and that is a one-credit version. That's obviously it's abridged, but it's narrated by Matt Damon and the author. Oh, which is kind of interesting. And if I'm not mistaken, the full version, the 1492 to present, which is, by the way, 34 hours and 14 minutes long, is narrated by, I think, Howard Zinn's son.
Oh, interesting.
I believe.
Boy, that's a journey.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is, it's a classic, obviously.
Now, he was pretty political, right? I mean, this guy, yeah. I haven't listened to read any of his stuff. Is it slanted politically? Or
No. I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think this is common for historians. They become political activists over time because they have such a greater appreciation for history. So in his later years, he spoke out against the Iraq War and things like that. But the thing that's interesting about this book is,
this was written in 1980, for one thing.
Yeah, yeah. But what's interesting about it, though, is just that it is history as seen by the people who lived at the time. In other words,
I like it. It's the people's history, not Abraham Lincoln.
Literally about the people who were, the citizens of the United States at the time.
See, I like that.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, typically history involves, the famous figures and the big events and all that. And this is more of a look at what was actually going on with regular people at the time. It's very interesting.
So this is the abridged version, which is nonetheless 8 hours.
Yeah,
it's still now you've tempted me. I'm kind of curious. I might get the 30-hour.
Yeah, the full version. Exactly. And yeah, the next time you fly to China or whatever.
You need to fly there and back and there and back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy, it would cost you $70 to buy that, but that's why it's two credits. It's so long. Most of the books are single credit. But see, if you can accumulate credits. So
yes,
you notice I have two in my account, so I could actually get this right now as part of my account. That's why a subscription is a great deal. Audible.com/windows. You sign up for the gold account, which is one credit a month. You can sign up for the platinum account. That's two credits a month. I think we have one, audible.com/twit, too. That's two credits. And if you signed up for that, you'd get two books a month, and you could get the full unabridged version. So I'll give you the choice. But the main point is go to Audible and enjoy this incredible resource. Ooh, they have 25 romance titles just in time for Valentine's
Day. Yes, I very briefly considered a romance title.
And then saw what they were. A lot of Jane Austen.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna
just
pass
get
this.
If you have to read,
I did
Jane
read
Austen.
Outlander. I did read Outlander, which is 32 hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's about a Scotsman and a woman who travels back in time and falls for this rugged Scotsman, and there's a lot of hugging on the moors.
Yikes!
Yeah, it's not
my kind of book.
I listened to the whole thing. I'm tenacious.
I often said that about you.
I'm tenacious. Once I start that thing, it's like I'm going to finish this book. And it wasn't actually bad. It was pretty good. I kind of enjoyed it, but it was a little romantic.
Was it a Neal Stephenson style slog through?
That I have not finished.
The Middle Ages,
the Baroque
in real
cycle?
Time.
No, have not finished. Yeah. Cannot.
I would
finish.
Like to meet someone who actually read that entire.
Oh, I know people who
actually got through it.
Oh,
really?
Not only read it all, but read it all several times. Love it.
It's brutal. I've reread some of his stuff. I read Cryptonomicon.
Love
at least
that.
Twice.
Oh, I'd read that. Over and over.
And Snow Crash twice.
And the new one, I think, is quite good.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it, but it's brand new. Just came out last year, and I loved it. But Baroque Cycle, I just couldn't. I tried to get through. I couldn't even finish.
That's a brutal one.
Yeah.
I think I brought, at least one of those books to the beach over the course of maybe three summers in a row.
Right.
And
it
really,
keep trying.
Really,
don't you hate?
Trying.
Don't you hate those books? Actually, Audible's good for those.
Well,
books.
They're human.
Because then you can fall asleep and you get 100 pages read without even knowing it.
Sure.
And the rule is, you don't have to rewind. you just keep on going.
I can't tell you how many times I've been bit by that.
Oh dear.
It's a mistake. You never should wear headphones in bed.
No, put you right to sleep. I do it all the time because I do not want to stop. I'm loving my book, but boom, you're gone. And I will rewind because I don't want to miss it. Audible.com/windows. Give it a try. We know you're going to love it. I mean, look, Paul and I are devoted Audible fans. If that doesn't carry some weight, I don't know what does. All right. Windows 7 tip of the week.
Yeah, this one's neat. This is from El Valenta. If you're familiar with Windows Search, which is an add-on you can get for Windows XP or Windows Vista, and it's been improved over the years. They're up to version 4. Previous versions of Windows, before Windows 7, you could search for all kinds of different things from the Start menu. And they really kind of scaled it back in Windows 7 for some reason. In fact, to the point where there's no search item even available from the, as there was in
no,
previous.
There's no more a built-in search?
No, it's still there, but you have to use a keyboard combo to get to F1. It. Yeah, or F3 is the would do it.
That's right. F1's Explorer, right?
Yeah, there are different ways. You know, different ways to get that thing to come up. But you could obviously. But it does have Start Menu Search, which is fantastic.
I love that.
Yeah. So by default, Start Menu Search only searches for programs and files, as it says. But there's a change you can make that will in local group policy that will allow you to also trigger internet searches using your default browser, whatever it is, and your default search engine, whatever that is. And you can do that from the, Start Menu Search, which is great for people like me who are touch typists and don't like to take the hands off the keyboard. And you can just tap the search key to, and type in your search. And then what you get is, now if you were to type in a search phrase in the default Start Menu, there's a See More Results button on the bottom. And if you click on that, that opens up that search results window. But when you make this change, there's a second option there that for internet search. So you can define where you want the search to go, and you can just go off from there. And I'll put this on my on the version of the tip I post on my site. I've been doing this every week. I put the tip on the site as well. But basically, you open the group policy editor, which is gpedit.msc, and you go through. It's a little bit like the registry. It's sort of a path you have to go through, but it's user configuration, administrative templates, and then start menu and taskbar. And the very top item in the list says add search the internet link to start menu. And you enable it, and there it is. And you can search the internet from start menu search, not just your
I like that.
Yeah.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Now, it always puzzled me that Microsoft offers a download search in addition to the one, I don't get. Can
so
you
why
explain
do they do that?
So, why do they do that?
Yeah, so they're improving their search technology over time, and Windows Client and Windows Server, whatever version that might be, ships with whatever version of Windows Search was current at the time, but they keep improving it. So Windows 7,
they don't want to push that out in updates. They just
It's something you can actually go and get. So Windows 7 ships with Windows Search 4.0, and one of the sticking points here, and this is something that comes up with regards to libraries and also home group, the features we've talked about before, is that if you want to search network locations from Windows, search network locations or access them from your libraries, that system on the other end has to be running Windows Search 4.0 as well. So for example, if you have a Windows Home Server device and you want to add some folders on that home server as part of the folders that are aggregated by your libraries on your desktop computer, you have to install Windows Search 4.0 on the server as well. So that's why they offer it, because, Windows ships with whatever version, but then Search gets updated as they go along, and they make it available for previous versions as well.
So you should, it sounds like everybody should just get, should update it. I mean, right?
Yeah. I mean, Chris, I tend to be running the latest version of Windows, so I'm not actually sure how or if Windows Search 4.0 is offered to, like, say, Vista users or XP users. I would imagine it's actually available in Windows Update, perhaps as an optional install.
Okay. Tip of the week.
Yes, so hopefully this will still be available by the time everyone hears this, but as of today it is. For a temporary time period, Amazon is offering Windows 7 Secrets, my book with Rafael Rivera, and also some other Windows 7 books, for a steep discount. So normally I want to say it's about 30% off, but right now it is 47% off, so it's almost half price. So if you go to Amazon.com and search for Windows 7 Secrets.
Now, is that your publisher doing that? Who's doing that? Amazon?
I don't believe it is the publisher, although, the funny thing is, the reason I don't think it's the publisher is the publisher wrote me and said, hey, we just found out this was happening. But when I looked at the list of books, most of them appear to be from my publishers. So I'm not really, I'm not actually sure, the chicken and egg here, but I do know that it's for a temporary time only. Unfortunately, it's only for the U.S. So if you're in Canada or international, I don't believe you'll get this deal. But it is a great savings.
Now, I bought the Kindle edition, which is even cheaper. It's $23.50 or $23.80.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's probably $26 and whatever.
$26.49, which is a great deal. That's really a great deal. It's a nice, thick book, really weighty, so you could use it for all sorts of things.
Absolutely. It would be a great pillow. It could hold doors open. If the house is snowed in, you can burn it for fuel.
So handy. So very handy.
And there's some good stuff in it, too. So.
Yeah.
It's up to you how you use it. It's multi-function.
Let's see here. So I will put the link in the show notes, but that's yes. That's Amazon.com. Just
but if you just go to, you could, you go to Amazon and search, yeah, you'd find it. Yeah. Would be, it's not a special link to get that price. It's right. Just at that price right now.
And now we got two, not one, but two software, yes, picks of the week.
Yeah, so the one that I did send you was the Visual Studio.
And I'm excited about this. That's great.
Yeah, next, the version of their development environment. So the
they
2010
give this away.
Version. Yeah, it's free. Well, it's RC, so it's a time-limited type thing. Okay. Previously there was a beta version. I want to say it came out in probably November, and I would suspect I recommended it at the time.
This is for programmers, and yeah, especially .NET programmers.
Yeah, but also web programmers. If you do web programming and you like to do so at a text editor, as I currently do, I can't actually claim that I like it, but I, you know, if you have to do it like I do, Visual Studio is an absolutely unbelievable text editor. With all the, you know, the context highlighting and all that stuff, but it's beautiful. And the 2010 version of Visual Studio was the first really huge WPF Windows Presentation Foundation application. And there's some interesting effects when you highlight text and so forth, where it's get kind of a, it's almost like a it's probably just the color they're using, but it's funny because it looks like it's a, like a see through effect kind of a thing, but. It's a great editor, and I've been using the beta version since November, or beta 2, maybe it was beta 2. And now the RC version is out, so it's getting close, but I use it, I mean, I've been using 2010 every day, so it's fantastic, and certainly certainly good for production websites and all that stuff, so check it out.
That's good.
MSDN.microsoft.
And that's expensive product normally, so that's a good deal.
Yeah, it really is. Although they always release an Express version of their different products. So they don't have a full suite in Express, but they'll have a version for C# and C++ and Visual Basic, and then the Visual Web Developer, or whatever they're calling it these days. And those are free. So there will be a free version of this when it comes out. But you can get, right now it's in the RC version, if I'm not mistaken, it's premium, professional.
You get the whole thing.
You can get whatever version you want.
So the free version is obviously stripped down, but has much of the same features? Or?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, great. And for what I use it for, it's perfect, actually.
That's great. So this is a way to try what you would get if you were buying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, and you said you had another one.
I do. This one is, well, I realize, you know, Visual Studio is not for everybody, obviously.
Yeah,
so
you got to be a programmer to really enjoy
I got this
it.
One from a reader. This is interesting. This is from Brent Berzicki, I hope. I hope I'm not butchering that. It's from a company called Piriform, and it's called Specky. And so if you go to piriform.com/Specky, and it's piriform.com/specky. You'll find this, and this is a really cool tool. And there's a lot of reasons why you might want something like this, but it's basically an advanced system information tool is how they describe it. And some of the things it's good for are, let's say you're running Windows 7 and you want to run XP mode, but you're not sure if your processor is supported. One of the things it will do is it provides, you know, the exact model and model number of your processor, the
This is great. This kind of takes over from Bellark Advisor, kind of, yeah?
Yeah, and it also has temperature gauges.
I see that.
The CPU, the graphics card, yeah, and the hard drives.
That's
so neat. You can make sure that they're running within normal ranges just at a glance. And you can go through each of the, you know, different components in your system. But, you know, Windows has always had some sort of a, you know, there's a device manager, which has always been horrible, especially for normal people. And then in Windows 7, they have a really dumbed down version called Devices. I think it's called Devices and Printers. Let's make sure, yeah. And it's almost like a Fisher Price kind of front end, you know, to the stuff that's on your system. And that's okay. That's cute. But this is just a nice list. It's exactly what's in your computer. So on my PC, I have an Intel Core 2 Duo E8400 running at 3 GHz. It says Wolfdale 45 nanometer technology. Right, very specific. 4 GB of Crucial technology, dual channel DDR2, running at 400 megahertz. The motherboard is a Dell, you know, whatever exactly what it is, supports one CPU, Intel G41 chipset, you know, on it goes. Very, very specific, very simply laid out, nice presentation, exactly the information you need. So, and it's free.
Piriform, piriform.com. They do CCleaner.
Exactly. And that's, yeah, I think, how most people probably know these guys.
Do you recommend a registry cleaner?
You know what? Yeah. So I get this one a lot. And the truth is, I just don't know. don't use them myself because of the type, because of the way that I use computers. I am always testing things. I end up wiping them out and reinstalling.
Which is really the best way to clean a registry, if you ask me.
Yeah, exactly. It's the nuke from space strategy.
Right, right.
I'm not saying that's, you know, the way to clean the registry, but unfortunately, the reality of my existence is that's unfortunately how I work. So I just don't know. You know, I don't know. There's another tool I'm testing, and I'll probably recommend this next week. I don't want to talk about it too much now, but one of the things that this other tool does is clean a number of things, and one of them is the registry. And I am going to look at that, and you know, it's unclear to me though how I can judge what effect that's having on the system. So
my opinion is that it's of limited use. I mean, I think people understand what they want to clean up stuff that's, you know, orphaned in there, but the risk of cleaning out something that you need, is so much higher than a benefit to the system. I wouldn't do it.
Right. And I would just say more generally, this falls in many ways under the, you know, maybe sometimes we overthink things a bit too much. You know, the people who manually run defragmenters.
Right, all the time.
You know, just to make sure, because you never know.
You know,
you could do things like that. And I certainly have gone through that phase myself, but just don't worry about it. You know, I mean, obviously some people are experiencing, you know, specific problems, but I've never considered the need for it, really. I've never had it. And again, part of it is just because of the way, you know, I use my computers.
No, you don't need it. You don't need a defrag either. But you're right. We are not the poster child because we reinstall.
Well, it's a side issue. But I mean, as far as defraggers go, the way it works in Windows 7 is it runs in the background. It only runs when it's idle.
Right.
So whether or not you believe that defragging your system will increase your performance, whatever, just don't worry about it. You know, for the most part.
Well, there
if you
we
have SSD drag. You don't want to defrag.
You can't defrag, man.
Yeah.
There is no.
But Windows 7 knows about that, so it's fine.
All right, my friends, we have come to the end of the road on this particular episode. Two tips, a feature, a software pick, a hardware pick, an audible pick, a nose pick. It's all been in here, ladies and gentlemen, and I hope you've enjoyed it.
Isn't there some Apple topic we should be bringing up? I feel like we're missing.
No. We didn't do it. Not the whole time. There's nothing to say here. Move along.
All right.
I mean, if you have something to say, say it.
No, I'm just curious. It seems like there should be something, you know. Did this a week went by where there was no Apple news? I mean, is that even possible? What would David Pogue write about?
They're resting right now. Actually, there is one bit of news, which is tomorrow.
I'm doing the keynote
at Macworld Expo, but you wouldn't want to go to that. You might get tainted.
If it was in the town I lived in, I would swing by.
Apple people all over. It's going to be fun. It's called Macworld Live. It's what David Pogue has done for years at Macworld, but he is going on to do the big speech that Steve Jobs used to do, the big keynote.
Sure.
Actually, he's done it now. It was today as we record. And then tomorrow I'm doing Macworld Live, and we have what it is. It's kind of like a talk show. So we have Heather Gold doing comedy. We have Roger McGuinn, the man who founded the Byrds, we're performing folk music for us. We have Adam Savage of the Mythbusters is going to talk a little bit about his experience. You know, he started as a model builder in movies. Very interesting film.
And not as a model.
Not, you know, a rugged man.
I've seen Mythbusters. Yeah. Not so much as
a model. He's a good looking fellow.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. And then Warp 11, speaking of good looking, Warp 11 will be performing Kiki. Do you remember Kiki Stockhammer?
Do I ever forget Kiki Stockhammer?
She's in my dreams. She was the beautiful, tall redhead who used to do the demos of Amiga's Video Toaster at the trade shows. She was a trade show goddess for years. Well, she's the front woman for a rock band called Warp 11. They do Star Trek songs, hard rock. It's great.
Wow.
And she will be wearing her, apparently it's some sort of rubber suit.
Yikes.
She said, do you want the PG cleavage or the R cleavage?
Yikes. And I hope you made the right decision there.
Well, I said it's a family show, but maybe later.
Sounds like you blew it.
I blew it. Okay, no. She will be there with the R cleavage, ladies and gentlemen. No, she's really actually very funny, very smart.
Sure.
And loves doing this band, and it's just a great band. Her husband is the lead on the guitar, and it's just fun. So we're gonna have a great time. That's tomorrow, 2 p.m. Pacific. If you're in San Francisco, come to Macworld Expo. If not, you can watch. We will be streaming. We only have one. It's a one-camera shot. It'll be on Kiki most of the time.
Time to move with her.
That's all you're going to see.
Yeah.
But that'll be starting at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on live.twit.tv. We will broadcast the whole thing. So there you have it.
I just don't know what to think about this. But good luck.
It's going to be fun. I'm really excited. I can't wait to do this. We'll see you all next week, and I'll tell you how it went.
All right.
On Windows Weekly. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
See you later.